Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast, where I profile agents of growth and transformation in education today. Each guest shares their highs, their lows, their passions, their goals, and the resources that are shaping their thinking and inspiring their practice. For show notes and links from each episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey. Let's meet today's guest. Today, I'm speaking with Aaron Blackwelder. Aaron is a high school English teacher and golf coach at Woodland Public Schools in Woodland, Washington. He's the founder of the Teachers Going Gradeless website and Twitter chat at TG2Chat, hashtag TG2Chat. He's also a father, husband, autism advocate, Google certified educator, and he is loving life. Follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron S. Blackwell 1, and that's Blackwell with one L, and visit his blogs at mrblackwelder.wordpress.com and teachersgoinggradeless.com. Aaron, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to chat education?
Absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to this.
Cool. Well, I am too. And it's fun, I have to say, coming to you roughly from Vancouver, Canada to Vancouver, Washington.
So that's, yeah, we're almost neighbors.
Yeah. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your current context in education? What does that look like on a daily basis for you?
So I teach at a small rural, it's a rural emerging suburban school. We're about 35 miles north of Portland, Oregon. And it is a fast growing community. We've got about 400 homes planned to go into our community in the next couple of years. We're a smaller school, but we're looking to grow pretty quick over the next few years, obviously. We currently have about 700 students in our school. I've been teaching there for about 13 years. I teach freshman English and senior English. And I've been doing both of those for about the last 13 years.
That's kind of a cool combination, right? From the freshman right to the seniors.
Oh, I absolutely love that.
So I like to start with story time here, Aaron. And we talked pre-interview about your low moments and times of adversity. So share with us in particular, I guess, retrace the events or the situation that led to your disillusionment with traditional grading practices and an embrace of gradeless practices.
So it started probably about 10 years ago. I began to look at what I was doing and wondering why. Why do kids need Beowulf? Why do kids need vocabulary development? Why? And just asking this question, I began looking at first the curriculum and wondering, how is it that the curriculum is really aligning with what the kids need? And when I started looking at that, we as a department kind of work together to figure out what is it that we want to do to help meet the needs of the kids first. And through that, it's just been an evolution where we've started dropping grades because we felt kids didn't need grades. What they needed was ongoing feedback that helped them to develop at an individual level. So we created a series of, about 5 years ago, we created a series of single point rubrics. And those single point rubrics, the idea behind that was to set the floor for student learning, but leave the ceiling completely open for where they could be. And eventually, we've just slowly dropped those single point rubrics. And now, we are very much in tune to just working with the kids at an individual level. We know what needs to be in a good writing piece, but quite often what a kid does may not always meet the mold of a good writing piece. It might surprise us that they can do something different or better than what a good writing piece models. That's kind of been the evolution of me going gradeless. I've been gradeless in my class for about 4 years now. And I've had the support of my administration It's been an incredible journey. I've had the support of my department, and we are getting a few teachers within our building who have been slowly becoming interested in the gradeless movement too.
I find it so interesting, Aaron, that you're, it sounds like you are launching out into this and maybe your department as well, but it's a selected classes thing. It's not an all school policy yet. And I think that's really bold. That's I would say fairly unusual, at least in my experience. I do want to talk more about what that looks like in your English classroom. You talked about no more 1-point scales, and this is strictly, it sounds like strictly feedback. So on some level, it must be, you know, work must be evaluated on at least a pass-fail basis, right? There must be, I guess, room for an assignment to be submitted that is simply not, it doesn't meet quality standards. And at that time you return it with feedback and you say, I can't accept this yet. It's not at the minimum, as you mentioned. Here's how you need to improve it. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, that is. Except what we do is it's not some arbitrary standards that somebody wearing a suit somewhere far away from us has determined these are the standards. What we've done, where I'm moving more towards is problem-based and project-based learning. My seniors are currently in the midst of a wonderful project. We started the semester by asking the question, what are some of the current problems that we see in our schools? And my students proposed a huge list of answers to that question. Like, we're seeing problems with school spirit. Kids will go to the football game, but they don't go to the knowledge bowl games. Mm. We have a huge problem with feminine menstrual products. The school doesn't supply them, and we have young women who need these, and they're not being supplied. We have a huge problem with sexual harassment between boys and girls. How do we deal with these problems? So my students have developed, they have shared what are the problems that they've seen. Now what we've done is instead of having my kids read books that are arbitrary books that somebody somewhere else thought was a good idea to read, they're reading books that align with the problems that they see within the school. I have a group that's working with issues of race in our school, and they have read The Hate U Give. I have young women that are dealing with sexual harassment, and they read a book called Sold, which deals with human trafficking. And so they're reading books that are aligning with their needs. And then what they've done is they have begun researching the problem outside of our school. What does sexual harassment in schools look like across the country? What does the need for feminine hygiene products look like across the country? And they've developed, established a research problem. They submitted a group essay that addressed what the problem looked like in research. As I read over it, I thought, okay, my responses to it were, hey, this is really unclear. Can you develop this a little bit further? Hey, this seems like it doesn't fit with what you're trying to say. Can you pull this out? Because ultimately, my kids are going to go further into this, find out what the exact problem is in our school, find solutions, and they're going to ultimately present their solutions, their findings, to either our faculty or to the school boards and say, hey, we need help with these, and this is what the research says, this is what's going on in our school, and these are some ideas on how we can fix this. Hmm. So I'm dealing with an authentic audience for my seniors, an audience that where they can honestly, truly make some significant change and leave the school with a legacy, knowing that they can be agents of change. And I feel that this is something, so when I'm assessing their work, it's not about, oh, do you have a thesis statement in here? Oh, do you have, it's more like, hey, you know what? You have an audience that needs to listen to this, and this isn't going to work right here. Or, hey, this is phenomenal. I love where you're going in this direction. let's make sure this is clear so that your audience can get that. So that's really where I'm going. And with my freshman class, we try to create more authentic audience with project-based. So they're doing, my seniors are doing problem-based learning. My freshmen are doing more project-based learning. And so their audiences are going to be, so when we did our Greek gods, we did our whole mythology unit. Instead of reading about the gods and taking some tests on them or writing some papers on them, we did a series of debates asking the question, who is the greatest Greek god? They all had to build up arguments. They had to build up some arguments for theirs, arguments against, and we did a bracketed series where they debated against each other, and it took us about 3 weeks to do that, just the debates, and we had a champion. And the kids, their audience was the opposing team and a panel of judges. And then, so to me, they kids need an authentic audience. They need, so as I gave them feedback throughout that whole project, it was centered on, hey, this argument is not going to work. You have these holes in this. You may want to clear this up.
Right.
And so they really didn't need me to put a grade on it, because a grade just kind of killed the whole momentum. What they needed was my feedback to say, hey, your arguments are weak, and here's where your opposing team is going to destroy you.
Got it. Got it. Yeah.
So
I love the fact that you've put your finger on some related C's, and let me explain. So assessment doesn't happen in a vacuum. I mean, you're putting your finger on content. Content relates, content connects, the culture of the school, the curriculum, and maybe that's content again. But all of these things really connect and they integrate with assessment. And so as you change your assessment approach and practices, that's also going to change how you approach learning and how you get to those curricular outcomes, right? I wonder, you know, you're the humanities teacher, as am I, at least naturally. That's where I orient myself. That's my wheelhouse. But I wonder what your colleagues in the maths and sciences would say in terms of being flexible with the curriculum and changing content. I wonder how they would respond to that, because, you know, the normal pushback from the maths and sciences, especially at the upper high school levels, is, you know, we need that assessment. We need to stay in the traditional model. We don't have any room to branch out into PBL and so on. How do you typically respond to that?
Well, without, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus here, but the, you know, BI and other project-based learning organizations, their main emphasis is on the math and sciences. And the most project-based learning has been developed around primarily sciences, but both maths and sciences. So it's actually kind of hard to find really good, in my opinion, it's really hard to find some good curriculum out there for the language arts. It's a lot easier, I think, to find it for the math sides. So if a math and science teacher said, hey, this won't work, I'd say, well, may want to look at BI. They've got quite a few resources for you, but not a whole lot for me.
Right. Cool.
So yeah, I do. I think that one of the things is that we do, I think, as educators, is we put ourselves in this mindset that we need to learn this information for the information's sake.
Right.
What we really need to do is we need to start asking, why are we learning this information? Is this information going to be essential to be used when the kids walk out of my classroom? As Alfie Cohn puts, he says that if they can't use it on the bus ride home, then maybe it wasn't that important. So in my opinion, building a strong argument, being able to intellectually debate something, is something that they can use on the bus ride home. Being somebody who can problem solve and be an agent of change is something they can use on the bus ride home. And 20 years from now. So I think those are the questions that we have to ask, is, are we preparing them for the test on Friday, or are we preparing them for something greater?
So Aaron, let's dig just a little bit deeper before we move on from gradeless practices. Make the pitch to those schools and those educators who are not sold on gradeless practices and systems. Why are they better for learners and learning in general? And maybe as a related question, what do you think underlines the resistance to gradeless practices that you come across?
Well, let's start from the top down. Schools, no teacher, or actually, let's go back. No school really wants to be put on a scale, on a 1 to 10 scale. They don't want to be promoted as the number 2 or 3 scale. They want to be considered a number 10 school. I recently wrote a piece about how state test scores and the publication of state test scores are really killing our schools. And if you ask any administration, if you go to any principal and ask them, do you like having your scores reported against other schools? The answer is no, they don't like it. If you ask any teacher, hey, do you like to have the number of Fs or your grades compared to other teachers' grades, or do you want your state test scores to be compared to other teachers' state test scores? The answer is no. If and then we have our teacher evaluation, would you want your evaluations published for everybody to see? The answer is no, we don't want to be evaluated and we don't want to have those as public record. We feel that that those things are very private, and we also feel they're very demeaning. They don't really help us to get that much better at what we're doing. And so why do we do practices to our students that we absolutely hate? Sitting in my teacher evaluation, if all my administrator did was just tell me, hey, you're exceeding in this area you're meeting, and in this area you're emerging, and he doesn't have conversations with me about how I can continue to get better as a teacher, then those conversations just seem to be pointless. Kids, part of the reason why kids don't like school is because they constantly feel judged. They constantly feel that that they're under a microscope and being scrutinized. What I find amazing is when I tell kids, okay, we're going to write something. If you put a piece of paper and a pencil in front of them, or you put a Word document in front of them, they block, because this fear that they're going to be judged for their writing just destroys them. However, if you put something different in front of them, like PowerPoint or something like that, and said, oh, I want you to start putting this together, they seem to just blow up and they can put all their work into it, because they don't feel, they feel this freedom that they can just go ahead and throw their ideas in. This fear that we're going to be judged just really crushes creativity and the ability to take risks. And I think that if we want to really promote education, if we really want to make learning about the student, then we need to work with the student on a one-on-one level and help him or her to develop them, rather than say, here's some arbitrary criteria, and you're either an A, B, C, D, or an F. Because kids get fixed in that mindset that, oh, how many times you hear them say, I just suck at math, or I'm just terrible at English. And it's because it's been reaffirmed to them over and over again that they get poor grades. Therefore, the school has affirmed them. And so how do we get them out of that mindset? We got to drop the grades, and we have to create curriculum that ties into the student's personal interests and needs that go beyond the test on Friday.
Yeah. Love it. One of the themes that I hear there is just the safety to take risks. And, we hear that question, hey, Mr. Blackwelder, is this for marks? Or I'm sure you used to hear that question. And that's a lot of the thinking behind that question, right? Is how seriously do I need to take this? Will I be put under the microscope, as you said? And is it safe for me to just be creative and try new things in this assignment? Or, do I have to fear censure of some kind? Let's move on and talk about teachers going gradeless. Aaron, you're on Twitter. You've got a website. You've got a podcast. Talk to us about the mission of TG2 and your vision for where you'd like to see it go.
When Arthur and I started Teachers Going Gradeless a couple years ago, we we really wanted to promote the idea that teaching and learning are much better when we just eliminate grades. It just allows more creativity, both on the students' end and the teachers' end. And we had several conversations before we actually launched it. And what we came down to was we wanted to create, because we were going to call ourselves Teachers Going Gradeless, we really wanted to emphasize the teachers, not necessarily the gradeless. And so we created a blog site that was more of a Wikipedia model. We wanted to host teachers around the world, and we've been we've got some contributions from all over the world, sharing ideas on how they've gone gradeless and how that's impacted their teaching. And so yeah, we've said about this model of this Wikipedia, and whenever we do our chats, we find somebody to moderate with us who seems to be an expert in that field. And so the mission of TG2 is to bring more awareness, but also to emphasize, hey, we have teachers all over the world who are who have a depth of knowledge. Let's tap into them and give them the platform to promote what we see as a vision for education together as a community.
That's very cool. I'm going to say that if you haven't seen Aaron's website, and I know he, as he said, he's putting it together with others, but I think you're the head editor.
Yeah.
Just look at all of the contributors here at teachersgoinggradeless.com. There are a lot of writers that have thrown in their perspective, and I really like that approach. That's provides a really rich source of content and ideas, and so it's a pretty cool place. Make sure you jump on there and follow along. Just in terms of your own practice, so you said you've moved away from a 1-point evaluation scale. Now, I am in my first year of going gradeless at my middle school, okay? And so all of our students are, you know, their report card appears in terms of proficiencies and competencies. And so they are evaluated in every subject, and sometimes it's broken down within the subject by a proficiency scale that looks like emerging, developing, proficient, and extending. And I'm sure you've seen those scales. What does your report card or your report cards, pardon me, in at the freshman and senior level, what do they look like if all they are receiving is feedback?
So I'm filling them out right now. We have our report cards are due on Tuesday.
Oh my goodness.
mine will say, mine will have a P on them. I basically consider all my students passing unless they're not showing up. If they just are constantly absent, then I'll put an F. But it's P or F will be on the report card. And then I'll give a narrative of what I see are their strengths and some areas of weaknesses. So there's a big, long narrative comment on my report card. The rest of the classes will have a traditional A, B, C, D, F, and they'll probably have a comment that's pre-plugged in that says, student is a pleasure to have in class. But mine is, I'm de-emphasizing the letter grade and putting personal comments. And it takes me quite a while to do those because I do comments about individual students. But I think that's worthwhile. If I expect my students to take the time to produce quality work, within my class and outside of my class, then they need to expect the same of me to do quality reporting for them, outside of the class.
Remarkable. I'm sure you have, I can only guess, 90, 120 students, or depending on the size of your classes. But as obviously you are a believer that anecdotal, the quality of that anecdotal feedback is going to be so much more informative than any A, B, or C, right?
Right. Well, then at the end of the semester, I do have to give a grade. That is something that's required of me. And that will be an A, B, C, D, F. And we conference it. At the end of the semester, I have a rubric that I use that models like a 4-point scale. And students evaluate themselves based on their work ethic, their collaboration, their initiative. It's a wonderful soft skills rubric that we use. And we just emphasize those soft skills because a lot of project-based learning deals with collaboration and really self-monitoring. I have them evaluate themselves on that. And then they look at their work throughout the semester and then they propose their grades to me. And I never say no. I just say, yep. And people will say, well, doesn't everybody just give themselves an A? And first of all, if I really don't care about grades, then why do I care if every kid gives themselves a grade or gives himself an A? If I was bothered by that, then why would I care? Matter of fact, I've even considered just giving every kid an A because what does it really matter later on? It's those comments. And then I created my own progress report, or my own report card, where I list out the soft skills that I see in the students. And I hand one of those out at the end of the semester, and those go home to mom and dad with a very detailed comments about the student's growth throughout the semester. And that takes me a little bit of time to do, but I feel that that's so worthwhile.
You mentioned self-evaluation, and I'm sure you employ some measure of peer evaluation. And it's important to mention those because together, you know, I've found that's one byproduct of going gradeless. We're sort of oriented to collect evaluations, or not even evaluations, but assessment and feedback from, or maybe just feedback. I'm trying to use the right words here, but you know, we're collecting this information from a variety of sources, and we're actually respecting the learner enough to say, hey, how are you doing in this specific area? And as it turns out, I've found the same as you have, that students tend to be pretty honest about where they are and where they feel they need to grow. And so I think the traditional system has kind of ignored the student voice, ironically, but we're learning to pay more attention and actually say, sometimes the student may know a little bit more about their progress than the teacher.
Well, and I agree. I think that, and I miss that, is I do a lot of peer evaluations. Like my seniors, they're in these campaign groups, and they evaluate each other periodically. And I sit down in conference with each one of them and share the results of their peer evaluations. And I have some kids that feel like, gosh, I'm just not doing enough. But their peers are saying, hey, you're doing an excellent job. We see you as a leader. We see you as somebody who's reliable. And we appreciate, here's what we appreciate. And then I have other kids who are just kind of screwing around and being on their phone. And yeah. I get comments, hey, this kid's on his phone. We wish that he was more engaged. And when I share those with kids, they go, gosh, they're either, wow, my peers really think highly of me and this is really nice. Or, boy, my peers see me as a goof off. I better get my butt in gear.
Right.
I really think that those peer evaluations are very useful and they have to be shared with them too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's shift gears a little bit, Aaron, and we'll move away from the gradeless practices for at least a few minutes. Outside of education, what's another area of learning for you? And what I'm after here is, you know, what is it that ignites your passions when you leave the school? What brings you alive as a human being?
My family. I have a wonderful family. And my wife is an amazing lady who just inspires me, and she challenges me and pushes me and encourages me. And I have two boys. I have two teenage boys, one's 16 and the other's 14. Both have autism. And we work closely with the autism community within our area. And I've been involved with a parent support group for teens, parents of teens who have autism. And then I write for a local magazine that's an autism advocacy magazine. Just working within the autism community has just been huge for me and my family. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for us.
Aaron, share about a personal habit or a productivity hack that contributes to your success. Is there something that you go to on the daily that really helps you make it all happen?
I love Google Forms. Forms and Forms Publisher, which is an add-on for Google Forms. As I said, I create my own report card. It's all done through Forms and Form Publisher. So I just kind of go through and check some boxes, type a few comments in, and then it creates a beautiful product for me. I have students write their own progress reports, and those get emailed to their parents automatically. I don't have to do a single thing. Forms and Form Publisher is amazing. I've even written about it on my personal blog site. It's called A Better Progress Report. I'm using Google Forms on a very, very regular basis to get student feedback. I absolutely love it.
We're moving into your quick picks, Aaron, and here we want to know about the education voices and resources that are shaping your practice and inspiring your thinking today. And we've already talked about those amazing contributors at teachersgoinggradeless.com, but starting at Twitter, tell us about someone we should follow there and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
Human Restoration Project is amazing. They're a must follow. I also really like the voice of Leanne Young. She's an advocate for special ed. Those would be the main people to follow. Jeff Friedren is amazing too. Those would be my to follows.
Aaron, recommend a book, one that you've been reading lately, or maybe one of your all-time faves, and tell us why you recommend it. And I always enjoy hearing an English teacher speak to this question.
So a couple books that I've read recently, which have made a big impact on me. One was Chasing the Scream by Johan Hari. It's about the historical war on drugs, and it deals historically with it, but then it moves into its impact, and he travels all around the world and he interviews people. For example, he interviews a transvestite drug dealer in New York. He interviews a scientist in Vancouver, BC. Just about what is addiction and what are we doing here as a government and as a community with drugs? Are we dealing with this correctly? Phenomenal exposition. And when he reveals what actually addiction is and how our system is actually contributing to addiction rather than really fighting it, it's pretty mind-blowing. So that's a definite must-read. Another one that I read recently, which really blew my mind, was a book called, and I can't remember the author's name, it's called Evicted. And he's an ethnographer who lived among people who were in the eviction cycle. He put himself in a trailer park and lived with them for about a year, and followed them around and interviewed them and just kind of listened and recorded their stories. And so you follow about four different people who go through the eviction cycle. They go from one place to another. And that was just an amazing read as well.
It looks like the author of Evicted is Matthew Desmond. So
yep.
A couple of great picks there. Thanks, Aaron. And then over in the podcast space, obviously I'm there with Teachers on Fire and hope you give us a listen at some point. But are there any other podcasts that you would recommend? What do you have in your deck right now?
Been listening to Teaching While White has been a really good podcast, and the Human Restoration Project. Both are phenomenal podcasts, high quality. Check them out.
Okay, and I need to include as well, of course, the TG2 podcast. Keep that gradeless conversation going. If this is something that you think, man, I need to improve in, I need to learn more about, make sure you subscribe to TG2 as well. Just for fun, Aaron, last question in terms of who you are as a human being. What are you watching on Netflix right now?
Oh, boy. I've gotten out of series lately, but I watched a documentary on Netflix called Abducted in Plain Sight. That was one of those shows that I just screamed at the TV the whole time. I don't know if I was entertained by it or disgusted with it. If you haven't seen it yet, watch it. If you think that people can be pretty terrible, watch this and this will shock you.
Wow. Okay. That sounds like one that my wife would not be quite up for. She has a very low tolerance for scary and concerning, but I like it. I like it. It's going on my list. Do you find, Aaron, between you and your wife, if you have separate profiles, do you find they are very different?
No, we pretty much, I would say most of what we watch on Netflix or on HBO is pretty similar. Where we diverge is I love watching baseball and golf, and she can't stand either of them. So,
Gotcha. Aaron, this has been so good. What are the best ways for the listeners to follow you and find out more about Gradeless Practices?
So how can they find out more? They can follow me on Twitter. My user is at Aaron S. Blackwell 1. They can also follow the at TG2 chat. They can also follow my website, the blog site, teachersgoinggradeless.com. And I have a personal blog that I try to keep updated. I don't get to write on that as much, but that's mrblackwelder.wordpress.com. Other than that, they're welcome to email me if they have questions. It's asblackwelder@gmail.com. Please direct message me. I have my message opened through Twitter as well as through Facebook, and people message me all the time asking me questions about going gradeless, and I just welcome those conversations. So please do.
That is awesome. And we should also mention the TG2 chat, Aaron. That is where you and I connected a few weeks ago. When does that happen, and is it a weekly chat or biweekly? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's the second and fourth Sundays of the month. So we'll be doing it. We do it second and fourth Sundays. And we find a phenomenal moderator to work with me who is an expert. We're going to be dealing with topics such as social justice. We'll be dealing with topics such as restorative discipline, not just going gradeless itself, but other areas that when we eliminate grades, we have to focus on as well.
Okay. And if anyone's confused, I know Aaron did mention at TG2 chat, the account. So that's an important one to follow. But I'm also thinking here of the, you know, the actual chat, which would be a hashtag, right? And with the same hashtag, TG2 chat. So look for that every second and fourth Sunday. Aaron, thank you so much for sharing your time with the podcast today. This has been so interesting, and I really like your level of thoughtfulness and reflection. And frankly, I look forward to engaging more with you on Twitter and some of the other spaces where you work. So instead of giving this conversation an A+, I'm simply going to give you some feedback and say, very well done, sir. Really appreciate the level of, as I said, the thoughtfulness and reflection and your perspectives and your transparency from your own practice. So take care, Aaron, and let's talk again soon. And good luck with report cards.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. And I appreciate your time too.
Thanks so much for joining me here today on the Teachers on Fire podcast. For show notes and links from this episode, visit teachersonfire.net. You can also follow the show at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Medium. And again, please do subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, saying goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast.